This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Vayikra el Moshe vayedaber Hashem elov me'or el moed lomer. And he called to Moshe, and God spoke to him from the Or HaMoed saying, and then the whole of the parasha starts. The whole shiur revolves around the first word of the Sedra, which is also the first word of the third Sefer of the Chumash, which we are now reading, the Sefer Vayikra. Says the Medrash, Rabbo, Vayikra el Moshe, Vayikra el Moshe, Vayedaber Hashem, Mikan Omru. From here, the rabbi says, Kol Talmid Chochum She'ein Bo Das, any Talmid Chochum who doesn't have Das. And you'll see from the continuation of the Gemara, of the Medrash, that Das here means, we'll define exactly what it means, but it means basic sensitivity. Any Talmid Chochum who doesn't have Das, common sense, let's translate it at the moment. Nevela Teva Himenu, it's very strong language. A carcass is better than such a Talmid Chacham. I'm not talking about just an ordinary man, we're talking about a Talmid Chacham, a man who can learn, a man who knows, a man who's big, but he doesn't have common sense. That's all, it's a Talmid Chacham, and he knows and he can learn, but without common sense. Nevela Teva Himenu, a carcass is better than such a man. That's what, how strongly the Midrash expresses itself with regard to such a person. Teva Lechon, illustration of the importance of Das, is from the case here, Shekenu, Teva Lecha Shekenu, you'll see the importance of this from the following case. Teva Lamad Mi Moshe, go and learn from Moshe. Aviha Chochma, he was so wise, father of wise people. Aviha Neviim, the father of prophets, he was the greatest prophet that there's ever been. Shehoitzi Yisrael Mi Mitzrayim, he took the Jews out of Egypt. The Al Yodoi Nasu Kano Nisim B'Mitzrayim, and through him many miracles were performed in Mitzrayim. The Neiros Al Yamsuf, and tremendous achievements on the Dead Sea. The Olol Lishmei Moroim, and he went up into the sky, into the heavens itself, Moshe Rabbeinu. Lifnei V'Lifnim, he went right inside, sorry, the Lishmei Moroim, V'Hori Torah Min HaShamayim, and he brought the Torah down from heaven. Then it's Asek bim Leches HaMishkan, and he built the whole Mishkan. V'loi Nichmas Lifnei V'Lifnim, and he wouldn't enter the Oel Moed, the central part of the Mishkan, Ad Shekoraloi, until God called him. Shneema Vayikra Moshe V'Yadam. And then he talked to him. Would have been very easy for Moshe to assume, I built it, I made it, I did everything. If it went for me, nobody would be here, nothing would be here. At least I can feel at home here. Moshe would not even enter the Oel Moed without God calling him in. That's the first, we've got to deal with that Midrash as the first part of this year. We have to be sensitive to Kriya. We have to be sensitive to the understanding that one, there are places into which one cannot go without being invited, without being asked in. That's number one. What are those places? Says the Gemara in Pesachim Daf Kuf Yud Beis Amud Aleph 112a. Tzivur Rabbi Akiva is Rabbi Yoshua Benoi. Rabbi Akiva commanded his son, gave his son various commandments, instructed him to conduct himself in certain ways. Some of them are the following: Bni Al Teshev Begoiva Shalir, don't live in the main part of the city where there's a lot of tumult. Just live in a quiet suburb somewhere where nobody will disturb you. Don't go into the central parts of where the whole community lives. Just live outside a little bit, the community. Communities are funny, you know, they like to ostracize people who live outside a little bit. Rabbi Akiva says, don't worry about them, just live outside a little bit, just not where they're going to disturb you all the time. And don't live in a town where the Gaboyim of the town, where the people who look after the affairs of the town are Talmidei Chachamim, because they haven't got time to look after the town properly, and you'll find the town is neglected. And you need to live in a town that operates competently and efficiently. It's very important to live in a town that works, because particularly as cities get bigger, there's nothing more time consuming and frustrating than a city that doesn't work. And a city run by Talmidei Chachamim is not a place to live. To live in a place where the heads of the city are not Talmidei Chachamim. They listen to Talmidei Chachamim, they'll take instructions from Talmidei Chachamim, but they themselves are not. Ve'al tikanes lebeischa pitoim, kol shchein lebeischa vecha. And don't go into your house suddenly, how much more so not into anybody else's house. Don't go unannounced into your own house, and how much more so into somebody else's house. So this principle which we learned from Moshe, that he wouldn't go into the oil moed until he was invited in, and we said that we have to become sensitive to the concepts of kriyo, that one has to be invited in sometimes, and until one's invited in one may not enter. What kind of places does that apply to? Kol shchein beis chaveiro, certainly somebody else's house, but even your own house you're not allowed to go into unannounced. You've got to be invited into your own house, not allowed to go in by yourself. Where does all that come from? Says Rashi, "V'loy tikanes beveis chapitoim, eloy hashmea es kol cholohem kodim boyacha." Make a noise outside the door. They didn't have bells like we've got. Make a noise outside the door before you come. Dilma avdi milta ditzniyuso. Maybe they're doing something at the house where they don't want you barging in the middle. Particularly in those days when they used to live in very small houses and everything used to go on in one or two rooms. But even in our house. Maybe your wife wants to do herself up before you walk in. Maybe she doesn't want you to see her with curlers in her hair or in a messy overall that she's just come out of the kitchen. Maybe she would like to see you, she would like you to always see her in the way that she would like to present herself. Give her the opportunity. Knock on the door before you come in. That's how it is. And we're actually noheg that way. That's the correct thing to do. That although it's not paskened in Shulchan Aruch, that is the derech eretz, that's the correct thing to do. And I once brought a very great rov to my house, and that's where I learned the Gemara for the first time. And I put the key in the door and I started opening the door. He said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm opening the door." He says, "Did you ring?" I said, "No, you don't. This is our, my house. This is our house. You can come in." He said, "I don't care whose house it is. You don't walk into a house without ringing. Do you know what's going on inside?" I said, "Where does that come from?" "Show me the Gemara. That's how we do." But you don't have to actually be invited into your own house. It's sufficient to make a noise before you come. So if they don't want you in, they'll say, "Hang on a moment, don't come in." You've at least got to give them the opportunity to say, "Stay out." Rabbi Yochanan, ki have ayil lebeisa. Rabbi Yochanan, when he used to go home, menanea, he used to the different gersoys, menanea, mevabea, mechachea, but it means he made a noise. He used to cough or clear his throat, whatever it was, at the door. Mishum shenema v'nishmu koilo bevoyo el hakodesh. And where did he get that from? The Medrash in Vayikra Rabba says, because when the high priest, when the Kohen Gadol used to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he used to wear begodim, he used to wear special clothes. And one of the items on those clothes were bells. Why did he wear bells? So the Torah tells us in Shemos Kafches in Parashat Tzaveh, "Ve'altisu al shulav rimonei tcheles ragam v'tala ashoni al shulav soviv u'fa'amonei zahav b'toicham soviv." You must put little golden bells inside these little pomegranate things that used to be sewn onto the edges of his clothes. And it describes exactly how the hoyo al aharon leshores, and it should be on Aaron when he serves. The nishma koilo bevoya el hakodesh, so that the sound of his coming can be heard when he comes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim lifnei Hashem. Uve tesei, and when he goes out, that's very strange. Velo yomo, so that he doesn't die. Rashi says the reason was because there used to be other people in that area, and the din was when the Kohen Gadol went in there, nobody else was allowed to be in there. So he had the bell so that the other people would know that they had to go out. The Ramban learns it differently. He learns it that way as Rashi, but he learns something else as well. The Ramban learns from the Megillah, Megillah Esther, which we'll read on Thursday night and Friday in Yitzhak Hashem, from chapter 4, where Esther says to Mordechai, "You can't just walk into the king." Mordechai says to Esther, "Go and tell the king what's happening." She says, "You can't just walk in. You can't go to the king without permission. You've got to apply, you've got to wait for him to invite you, you then go in, and then if he shows you his shavit zahav, his golden scepter, and he knocks you on the head with it, then you can speak. Otherwise you can't even speak. And he hasn't called me, I can't go if he hasn't called me. Says the Ramban, from there you see that it's not covered to a king to enter his office, to enter his sanctuary, his palace, without being invited. And if that's the so with Achashverosh, how much more with the Ribbono Shel Olam? And if it's so with the Ribbono Shel Olam, that's why Aaron used to wear the bells, so as to announce himself before coming into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, says the Ramban. We have two questions on that. Our first question is, alright, I understand why he wears the bells when he goes in, but why does it say Uvetseiso, and he must wear the bells when he goes out as well? Why is it necessary for him to wear the bells on his way out? Does he have to announce himself out? The second question is, what does Rashi say? Why do you have to knock on the door of your own house before you go in? Because of tznius. Right. In the case somebody is doing something private there and doesn't want to see you in, right, so you ring the bell. He brings an example from Rabbi Yochanan, that Rabbi Yochanan used to cough outside his own front door so that if they didn't want him in at that moment, they could shout, hang on a minute. Okay. And what's Rabbi Yochanan's proof that that's what you've got to do? From the Kohen Gadol, the bells on his garments, that he wasn't allowed into the Kodesh HaKadoshim without the bells. What's he afraid of? That God doesn't want him in? He's busy doing something private in there. What's the proof? So we must say that that's not what Rashi and Rabbi Yochanan bring the proof for. What they bring the proof for is only one concept, and that is that making a noise outside is as good as being invited in. There are really two reasons why you've got to knock at the door. Or there are two reasons for which you must be invited to a place before you go in, depending on the situation. One is if you're going into the place of an Odom Choshuv, if you're going into the private area of an important man, even if there's no chance of him being busy doing something private, because he's busy receiving people, let's say, it doesn't matter. It's an act of kovod, it's derech eretz, to be invited before you go in. You don't just barge into an important man's office, no matter how well you know him, it makes no difference. You don't barge into his office or into his room or into anything else. You wait till you're invited. That's how one treats an Adam Choshev, an important man. That's one example. Another example is one's own home, where it's necessary to knock even on one's own home, there because of tznius. What Rashi wants to prove is that it's enough to make a noise outside, that you don't have to actually wait till you're invited. It's enough to make a noise. That he proves from the bells of the Kohen Gadol. Why does the Kohen Gadol wear the bell? So that he shouldn't come into the Beis HaMikdash suddenly, as Rabbi Yochanan says in the Medrash. In the same way as you don't go into a king's room unannounced, so you don't go into the Ohel Moed unannounced. How do you announce yourself? By making a noise on your way in. That's all. To give God the opportunity, so to say, hang on, don't come in yet. And that we do as well. Therefore, whenever one goes into the private property of somebody else, one has to give that person the opportunity of saying, don't come in now, come back tomorrow. And that's the first thing that I want to examine with you a little bit. Sensitivity to Vayikra, to being invited in. Every human being, and in fact not only human beings but animals too, most animals, establish areas of private territory for themselves, and they regard it as an act of hostility if a member of their own animal class enters that area without their permission. An act of aggression. Human beings are similar. We have our areas, we have our place, and we get very upset if anybody else comes in. You wake up in the middle of the night and there's somebody in the garden, you don't offer him a cup of tea. You take a great offense. What's he doing there? What are you looking for at this time of the night in my house? We're very, very possessive about our property. It's not only a question of property. We put up other barriers around ourselves too. We have privacy, and we're entitled to our privacy. We're entitled to our homes, and we're entitled to our gardens, and we're entitled to our own emotions and our own feelings too. And we're entitled to put a certain barrier in front of them. We don't have to show them to the whole world. It's none of their business. And people have to know how to be sensitive to the barriers which are put up by others. In the same way as one wouldn't just walk into another person's house unannounced. So you don't walk into his feelings unannounced, and you don't walk into his privacy unannounced, and you don't wind yourself into his private dealings unannounced. It's none of your business. If you want to help him or you want to get in, wait for him to ask you. at most, make approaches. Make a noise, ring a bell as you walk towards him. Show him that you're coming and see what he does. Maybe he's too inhibited to invite you in. So you start walking slowly, ringing the bells as you go. And let him say, stay out, and people know how to give such sign languages to, keep off. Or let him say, okay, come in. Or let him say nothing and you carry on, but at least he heard you coming. You don't impose yourself. You don't walk in. You don't open the door and burst in. Something one has to do very delicately and very sensitively. People are entitled to their privacy, and an individual can't grow and can't develop if he doesn't preserve that privacy. And we have to develop sensitivity towards that. What is a Talmid Chacham? A Talmid Chacham is not somebody that can see what everybody else can see. For that you don't have to be a Talmid Chacham. The essence of a Talmid Chacham is to be able to see things which others can't see. And they've got to be as clear to a Talmid Chacham as the things which others can see are. So fences and walls and doors and gates that everybody can see. You don't have to be a Talmid Chacham that if you come to somebody's house and there's a big iron gate with a huge 8-foot wall around the house and there's a little intercom next to the gate, you don't have to be a Talmid Chacham to know that you should press the intercom and say who you are and ask them to open the gate. You don't have to go climbing over the wall. But you don't have to be a Talmid Chacham for that. Any human being will know. Anybody will understand. What you have to be a Talmid Chacham for is to be able to see that gate and to see that fence and to see that intercom and to see that button to press even when it's not there. It shouldn't be necessary to be there if you're a Talmid Chacham. The gates are up there for Amaratzi. The gates are up there for ordinary passers-by. A Talmid Chacham doesn't need them. He knows how to respect the privacy of others without them. And you remember that was the brocha of Bilam. That's what impressed Bilam about the way the Jewish people were living. That they designed their houses in such a way that they couldn't look into each other's affairs and into each other's business. Unlike the way we do things today, where we think it's our rights to know what everybody else is doing. It's not our rights, it's none of our business. And that says the Medrash. A Talmid Chacham, whose whole purpose of a Talmid Chacham, he's missing. He's got the body of a Talmid Chacham without the neshama, without the soul of a Talmid Chacham. He's worse than a carcass. Why is he worse? Let's say it's just as bad as a carcass. No. A flower that dies, shame, it's a pity. So you clean it up, it goes. An animal dies, it's worse. So the body starts smelling after a while, the carcass starts smelling. A human being who loses his neshama, it's even more disgusting. A dead animal body is one thing, but a dead human body is different altogether. That's something we find very difficult to relate to. And when a human being loses his neshama, let's say a Jew loses his neshama, his Jewish neshama, not his human neshama, he's still living as a human being. He just loses his Jewish neshama. He is much worse than a goy, much worse than a non-Jew. A Jew who doesn't have a Jewish soul, who isn't living according to the essence of what Yiddishkeit is meant to be, is much less valuable, worthy of respect and of honor than a non-Jew who's living like a mensch, who's keeping a set of moral values, living an upright life. Can't compare it. The Jew who's lost his Yiddishkeit is worse. And the Talmid Chacham who's lost his neshama, he's still a Jew. He's got his Jewish neshama and he's got his human neshama. He's not dead and he's not un-Jewish. He's got his Yiddish neshama and he's got his human neshama, but not his Talmid Chacham neshama. The Talmid Chacham neshama is the ability to see things which others can't. The ability to see the gate and the fence and the intercom when it's not there. Talmid Chacham has lost his neshama. Is much worse than the lowest down than the animal who's lost his neshama. It stinks much worse. And it's more dangerous. And it's more harmful. And it's more disruptive. To have a Talmid Chacham that doesn't have that sensitivity. And that's unfortunately one of the eras in which we're living. We're living in a very complex age. But we're living in an age where, among other things, people who are striving to become Talmidei Chachamim don't realize what it means to become a Talmid Chacham. It means developing this kind of sensitivity, the ability to see the barriers even when they're not there, and to be able to respond to them, respect them, and know how to press that button, know how to get inside without offending. That's what a Talmid Chacham is. Just to stand off, not to go inside. Okay, he's got a gate there, I won't go in. That's not a Talmid Chacham. To just barge in, that's not a Talmid Chacham. A Talmid Chacham knows how to slowly break down the barriers and make progress and go in a way which is acceptable to the man who lives inside. And therefore says the Medrash, Kol Talmid Chochem She'ein Bo Das, a Talmid Chochem who doesn't have this knowledge, that's the knowledge of a Talmid Chochem. It's not how much Gemara he knows, it's not how much Chumash and Rashi he knows, that's just part of it, that's how you get there. But that's not the Neshama. The test of a Talmid Chochem is how sensitive is he among people. Can he notice what others are thinking? Can he respond correctly to people? Or does he keep on putting his foot in it? And if he keeps on putting his foot in it, Nevela Teva Himen, a carcass is better than him. We treat a carcass with more respect than we treat such a Talmid Chochem. We've got no time for such a person at all. And we learn that from Moshe. As great as Moshe was, wouldn't even go into the Ohel Moed without being invited, without being asked there. That's the one side of the coin. Now the other side. Before we get to the other side, what's the difference between the permission one needs before one goes into a king, or the permission one needs before one goes into one's own home? The difference is, what do you have to do when you leave? You don't have to ring the bell on your way out of the house, provided you said goodbye to your family. It's just rude to leave your family without saying goodbye, but you don't have to ask permission or make a noise or do anything like that. If you leave a king, you have to ask permission. And there are two fascinating midrashim that I would like to show you. One of them is the Medrash Rabbah, which says, Omar Noach, Noach said at the end of the flood, Kashem shelo nichnasti batevo elo birushus, in the same way as I didn't walk into this ark without permission. That's amazing that he did that. He's been building this ark for tens of years, for over 100 years, and he knows the flood is coming. It starts raining, he still doesn't go in. Would have been a natural thing. Oh, the rains are coming, right, time to go in. Oh no, it's not my ark, I can't just walk in. I'm making this ark for the Ribbono Shel Olam, it's his. If he wants me in, he must invite me in. And Noach waited until God said, right, go in. Then he went in. Kach ein ani yotze ela birushus. And when the land was dry and the rains had stopped and he knew that there was dry land to go down onto, did he walk out? No. The same way as I didn't come in without permission, I won't go out without permission. And Noah had a terrible time in the ark. He worked day and night. He didn't sleep. You know what it was to feed those animals? Hundreds of them. To clean up after them. To keep the place going. Noah worked and pained himself. He had terrible tzoros in the ark. It wasn't an easy time at all. Can you imagine how he must have been dying to get out of there? And as soon as it was over, surely he would have rushed out? No. Not Noah. I didn't come in without permission. I didn't get out without permission. So altogether, on a simple level, that's Derech Eretz. A place that needs permission to come in needs permission to go out. That's Derech Eretz. If somebody invites you to their home, the correct thing to say, you would like to leave now, thank you for having me, goodbye. Not just to walk out. And I must tell you, that applies to anything which requires where there's a fence and a gate. And anything which isn't hefker, anything which isn't chaotic and ownerless, has a fence and a gate of sorts. Bigger fences, smaller fences, whatever it is. And it's the same to a shir. Derech Eretz, when the shir is over, to come and say good night. Thank you for the shir, good night. It's not a railway station, just walk in, walk out. Never know you, never hear your name. Never know where you come from, what you are, who you are. What's it? No fences, nothing. You don't even see the fence. You don't even see these are rail doors. These you don't even need very much imagination for. And there's a rail gate outside. This is private property after all. This is a base of medrash, belongs to somebody. Being organized by somebody, being led by somebody. The Derech Eretz. To say, may I come to the shir? And when the shir is over, to say thank you. And a person who's coming regularly doesn't have to say, may I every time, because he said, may I for once. But he can still say good night every time. Wouldn't be a lack of Derech Eretz to say good night before he goes out. That's what it is. And maybe it takes you a few minutes longer to leave the Beis HaMedrash. Maybe I'm busy talking to somebody, so you wait a few minutes. It's not as bad as Noach, who for those days in the ark was toiling. Can you imagine how he wanted to get out? Not without Rishus. You don't do it until the Ribbono Shel Olam says it's time to go. Thank you, Noach, the job's over. Then he goes out. And I'll give you one which is even more incredible than that. And that's in the Midrash Tanchuma also on Noach, where the Midrash relates the whole story of Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, who were thrown into the furnace by Nebuchadnezzar. And finally God comes and organizes them and puts out the fire, and everything's done. Kivan Sheroa HaMelech, when the king saw the wonderful miracle, that's Nebuchadnezzar, Omalem Tzulachem Mikan, Sharek Farhiti Lethem HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ba'asalachem Nisim V'Yishro La'aretz. Because God, get out of here, because God's already done you wonderful miracles. Omalei, they said to him, Omrulei, Ein Anu Yotzim Elo Bereshus HaMelech. We didn't get into this fire without the king's permission. We went there out without saying goodbye, and without getting your permission to go out. They were thrown into a fire to be destroyed. It doesn't matter. They were thrown in. They wouldn't have gone in without his permission, and they won't go out without his permission. That's the level of Derech Eretz. And particularly with a king. Because as far as the king is concerned, it's not just that they're going out. Going out requires Derech Eretz, also requires to say goodbye. But they're not just going out. They're re-entering the world. And the world belongs to the king. That area, that country belongs to Nebuchadnezzar. He threw them into the fire to destroy them. They weren't destroyed, so it's as if they're re-entering his country. If you re-enter somebody's country, you need a visa, you need permission to re-enter. And despite the way they were treated by Nebuchadnezzar, that's no excuse for not being a mensch. That's no excuse for not getting the necessary permission before re-entering the country. And how much more so in the case of Noah, where he was re-entering the world. And who did the world belong to? The Ribbono Shel Olam. He wasn't just going out of the ark. He was re-entering the world, and for that he needed permission. That's how one treats a king, because of his ownership of areas outside of his immediate premises. And apart from that, just general Derech Eretz is such to be sensitive to the barriers. Notice that they are there. Notice that there's somebody behind them. And show the necessary Derech Eretz to that somebody. Let him know you're coming. And if he's expecting you, let him know that you're not coming. And when it's all over, say goodbye. That's all that the Derech Eretz requires. A certain seriousness of interrelationship. A person is entitled to that kind of Derech Eretz. And that's why I'm so makpid with the shiur, and not so much with this shiur, although even with the shiur, as far as the regulars are concerned, that if you're not coming, you phone and you say, sorry, you won't be at the shiur tonight. That's Derech Eretz. That's just how the world is meant to run. Now the next thing. Robert Audrey says that the dog who barks at the passerby from behind the fence is not doing that from any different motivation to the balabos who built the fence in the first place. Same thing. Men and animals are the same. That's his whole thesis. That's everybody's thesis. Men are just glorified animals, and the same as men as animals have their territory and they get upset if you come near, so men have their territory and they put up fences. Now putting that's completely wrong. Men don't put up fences only to preserve their territorial imperative, to observe their area of territory and to keep others out. That's not the end of the story. And now you'll see what Torah is, and now you'll see why Robert Audrey couldn't possibly understand. Just listen. Rashi says, L'chol divros, l'chol amirus, l'chol tzivuyim kodmo kriya. Although it says Vayikra here, really, says Rashi, every time God spoke to Moshe, and it's based on the Sifra, every time God spoke to Moshe, he called him first and then he spoke to him. Said Moshe, and then he spoke to Moshe. Loshin chiba, it's a way of endearment, to call a person before you speak to him. Loshin shemaloche hashores mishtam shinboy. It's a language which the angels use. It's angelic. It's so refined and so noble that it's almost superhuman. It's angelic to call somebody before you speak to him. As it says, as we say in the davening, Shneema v'kolo zel zel. The angels call one to another. Aval neviya ya'umu es hakum, but to the non-Jewish neviim, nigle aleim beloshon aroi v'tumah. He appears to them just haphazardly, in using a language of coincidence, it just happens, the tumor and defilement. It's very strange what Arai has to do with tumor, but we'll understand that in a moment. Shneemar, as it says, Vayaker Elohim El Bilam, and Hashem chanced upon Bilam. That's how God speaks to Bilam. When it's Moshe, God calls Moshe. When it's Bilam, he happens to pass Bilam in the street. Oh, Bilam, while we're talking, let me just have a chat with you about A, B, C, and D. Just happen to see you. Not so with Moshe. The fence is important for another reason too. The fence is not just to keep others out. The fence is to afford you, the barabos, the opportunity to selectively invite certain people in. That's what the fence is for a human being. A Jewish house is not to keep the public out. A Jewish house is to keep or to bring selective people in. We don't treat everybody equally. We're not democratic. Different people are treated differently. We don't treat a tzaddik the same way as we treat an amoritz. We don't treat a chosid the same way as we treat a bur. They're different people. We don't teach a person who's working on himself and progressing and achieving, we don't treat him the same way that we treat just an ordinary man in the street. Everybody's treated differently. In fact, we try to treat no two human beings the same. Everybody should be treated differently. If you're really responding to what they are and not to what you, your pictures of humanity are, then you'll treat every human being differently, and that's what we do. And one of the mechanisms we use to treat every human being differently is the fence. Not anybody can walk into my house. Selective. The Medrash Tanchuma in fact says, what's so special about this Vayikra? Everybody's going crazy about this word Vayikra. God called Avram, and he called Noach, and he called Odom. The word Vayikra is used with others. Says the Medrash, but with others there was nobody else to call but Odom. Who else is God going to call? And with Noach there was nobody else in that generation to call but Noach. And with Avram there was nobody else in that generation to call but Avram. In Moshe's generation there was Moshe, there was Aaron, there was Hur, there was Bezalel, there was Yeshua. There was a whole team of outstanding people. And God called Moshe. That's the real kriya. Inviting somebody particular. Not just an open call because you're the only person here, so come in. That's not invitation. Invitation is dafke you. Other people will get feribled. That's their problem. I don't have to worry about other people. I want you in my house. That's what I want. And that's the Vayikra. The selective calling. And that's why Vayikra always connects with a person's name. And the name is the way you call him to differentiate among others. I mentioned to you in one of the shiur in Israel, very often if there's a whole crowd of people and they want somebody and they don't know his name, they say, pfft. And everybody looks around and they point at the one that they want and he can, and that's just so inhuman. Right? You find out the person's name and you call him by name. That's the way you select an individual out of a group, by his name. That's Vayikra, that's how you call a person. And any other way of calling is rude and unacceptable. That's it, you don't just say hey or you or anything like that. Find out his name and you call him by name. That's how you select. And that's one of the purposes of the fence. Notice that Avram's house had four doors because he liked lots of people to come in. So why didn't he build a house without walls? Why didn't he just put a roof? They had doors. There are four of them, but they're all doors which can be closed. His house wasn't Hefka. People didn't just walk in and out, and you'll remember, on the contrary, he used to test them very severely under that tree before he allowed anybody into his house. It was very selective invitation. Anybody could come and sit out under the tree, but to walk through that door you already had to be somebody. You wouldn't take anybody into his house. So something which in our democratic age we find a little bit difficult to understand. But that's what Vayikra means. And that's what a human being is capable of doing. When we build a wall, it's not the same as a dog barking. It's very different. We build a wall because we want to be able to choose who to admit. That pleasure of choosing who our friends will be, of choosing who we let in on merit, that's a pleasure which we want to reserve for ourselves, and which we're entitled to reserve for ourselves. So that's the other side of the coin. The first side of the coin is be sensitive to other people's barriers. The second side of the coin is use the barriers you construct correctly. And we establish barriers around our emotions for the same reason. It's none of everybody's business how I feel about everything. What's it got to do with them? One has to retain a certain privacy. However, one likes to be able to admit certain special people into different levels of intimacy, depending on the relationship, on the type of person, on the sensitivity of that particular person. And the extent to which we let the outsider in is an expression of the extent to which we value him. To put up a wall around ourselves and let nobody in, that's not how a Jew operates. To have no wall at all and let everybody in, that's how a baby operates. But an adult Jew establishes a wall, and depending on the way people respond and onto his special friends and people he can trust and people he can rely on and people he can communicate with, he lets different people in on different levels of operation. And that's the way he expresses his value. There's no way that you can imagine everything in the world had the same price. Everything cost 1 rand. Made no difference. A bar of gold, a house in Sandton, a Chappie's chewing gum, anything was 1 rand. So the money loses its value altogether. Once you start treating people all the same, your human relationship value system becomes non-existent. If you smile at everybody, if you're a person who smiles at everybody, hello, how are you, so lovely to see you. And when you say that to me, do I feel any different or special? It's exactly the same as if you would say to me, hello, I don't care how you are, how miserable it is to see you. It makes no difference. It makes absolutely no difference. You have no value system. You have no way of relating to different people in different ways. And people need to get that feedback. They need to know from you. Are you accepting them? To what degree are you accepting them? Are you trusting them? Are you prepared to take them in a little bit? If not, why not? What can I do to get in? One has to find that little intercom button. One has to play around until one does, and then you find it and the gate's open. You find there's still a front door inside, and you find that he doesn't want to open the front door. In the garden you can play, but not inside. And eventually you find that he'll let you inside, and then it means something after you've worked on a relationship. We're funny people in this country. We expect relationships to go easy, and when we find the gate is locked, we walk away like little children. You don't understand what work goes into developing a relationship. What hard work goes into developing a relationship. It's sometimes painful, it's hard, it's thankless, until the end. When the door finally opens and you go right inside, then it's worthwhile. And you've got to decide when you're standing outside whether you want to spend the time and effort breaking in. If you don't, then don't waste time. But if you think this is a relationship you might one day value, if you think this is a person you want to get to know, don't expect him to open the gates just because you're standing outside. You have to work on the acquisition. You have to purchase a friend. You have to acquire his trust. You've got to acquire his respect. It's a kinyan that has to be made. It's a deal that comes after years and years of negotiation, of social negotiation. And finally you get in. And it can't be sporadic. You know, you try one day and then you leave it for a year and you try again and you leave it. That also doesn't work. If it's a relationship you want to build, you've got to build it in. And that's the Talmid Chacham. He's sensitive to the barriers, and he doesn't burst into the barriers. And if it's a barrier he wants to break, he knows how to get in. He waits till he's called in. But he knows how to hang around and be in the right places and show that he's interested in coming in. That's Vayikra. There's another type of barrier. Or shall I say first, there's another use of building a fence. If the newspaper is lying on the ground on my side of my fence, what do? I pick it up and take it inside. It's obviously the delivery man who's delivered the newspaper for me. And if a newspaper is lying outside in the street, I regard it as rubbish. I don't even wonder why it's there. Who put it there? It dropped there. It's nothing to do with me why it's there. A fence takes away the element of chance from what's inside the fence. Everything that's inside the fence is there either with my approval, because it's forming a specific purpose, or it's there maliciously. Those are the only conditions under which they can be there. Let's not take a fence, let's say inside the house. Anything which is inside my house is there with my approval and knowledge, because it's playing a part in my house. Or it's there against my knowledge and approval, in which case it's malicious. And that's why the Torah says, if you wake up in the middle of the night and you find somebody in your house, don't ask questions and don't start negotiations. Get your revolver out and shoot him dead. That's what he deserves. He has no right whatever to be there. And if he's there, he'll have no qualms about shooting you dead. A man is prepared to walk into another man's house without permission is a man who killed two. He doesn't understand anything about human respect. And you better get him before he gets you. That's the din. A home or an area which is marked off is an area which over which I, the owner, exercise control. And therefore everything there has a purpose. That's what control means as opposed to chaos. Once that's the case, there's another area of fence building that I want you to understand and appreciate. And that is the area of your sphere of influence. People sometimes think very small. They think of their room or their house. If they're really broad-minded, they think of their garden too. And they're really people of enormous stature and very civic-minded people might even think of the city as their area. Maybe even the country, if they're the prime minister or the foreign minister or something like that, they might even think in terms of the country, but that's about as far as it goes. One has to understand that there's a fence around everybody's sphere of influence. In other words, there are things which God specifically brings into your sphere of influence. The same way as if the newspaper is lying in your garden, it's been brought there by someone for you. And you know it's for you, and you take it and treat it there accordingly. If the newspaper is lying outside, you assume it's not for you. How did it get there? You don't know, just by chance. Even if it happens to be tonight's newspaper, and even if you happen to be looking for one, you'll never, it'll never enter your mind that somebody put it there for you. Sure enough, that's outside. It can be 6 inches away from the other place. Newspaper lying here, you'll know it's for you, and a newspaper lying here, you'll assume is not for you. What's the difference? One is in your property, one is not. Now imagine for a moment that your sphere of influence, the area in which opportunities present themselves to you, is fenced off. And imagine we picture it that way, and then we would understand that every opportunity which comes your way has been presented to you and put there for you to attend, for you to tackle, and for you to challenge. That's why it's there, and it's been put there by the Ribbono Shel Olam. Nothing's there by chance. If we view our area of influence, and our area of influence can be enormous, it makes no difference. It depends on what level we're operating. It can be the whole world. It can be parts of the world. It can be the whole world in the area of stamp collecting, or the whole world in the area of whatever it is, coin collecting, or a certain type of business or profession, or whatever it is. It makes no difference. My sphere of influence, the area into which opportunities present themselves to me, if I see that as a fenced off area, and I understand that whatever comes my way has been put my way, I treat it with a completely different understanding than if I see it all as heft. I'm just operating in a big yard where nobody's the boss. It's just a huge bus terminus here, like the Tachana Merkazit in Tel Aviv, where everything comes and goes and nothing belongs to anybody, and everybody pushes and kicks and stands on everybody, and it just makes no difference. That's what the world is. If my view of the world is like the Tachana Merkazit in Tel Aviv, then nothing is meaningful. Why did that man push me? Because there was no place on the other side. Why is this? There's no reason for anything. Whereas if I see my world as a fenced off area, then I've got to say about everything. Why is this here? What can I do with this? How can I use that? Who brought me this? Why did they bring it to me exactly, not to somebody else? Why can I use it better? Why can I grow better out of using it? What can I contribute to it that nobody else could contribute? And so one starts viewing everything that happens to one in a much more special and in a much more positive way. The area where that's most difficult to practice is in the area of business. The area of business, the tendency to believe in coincidence is very great, because to believe in anything else minimizes one's own skill. And I've never understood really how any businessman regards himself as being skillful. 90% of business success is being in the right place at the right time. That's what 90% of it is. 10% is knowing what to do when you are at the right place at the right time. There are some people who will be at the right place at the right time and still won't know what to do. Okay? Never, what can you do? There are such people. And they'll never make a success. But the rest of it is simply being at the right place at the right time, having your eyes open, noticing, questioning, as we're discussing, seeing that everything has a reason and must be happening for some purpose and going in some direction, and being at the right place at the right time. Go to any successful big businessman and ask him about the origins of the beginning of his success, and he'll tell you he happened to know somebody and happened to be walking there, etc., etc. And the word happened always comes in. So happened. Somebody will come home and he'll tell his wife, you know, an amazing coincidence happened today. I happened to be walking downtown, and just then Harry Oppenheimer had to be walking across the road. I bumped into him and said, excuse me. And he said, what's your name? And I told him, he said, what did you do? And I told him, he said, oh, I'm just looking for such a man. And he took me in and he said, look here, I understand that you wouldn't work for me for nothing. Do you want shares in my company as well? Because it so happens that somebody just like you has just disappeared and his shares are all available and you're just the kind of guy I need. It just happened that way, just by chance. And so I'm now a shareholder of Anglo American and the director of it. Yeah, tremendous. To believe in such a coincidence is harder than to believe that it was Siyad Ishmael, but people don't like to believe that it was Siyad Ishmael, whereas saying it was Siyad Ishmael is saying, look, I'm an absolute bumbling idiot. It happens, the Rebbeinu Shlom is looking after me, what can I do? That's what's happening. And one doesn't like to paint oneself like a bumbling idiot, so one prefers to say that it's coincidence, either that it's one's own skill, that's the one level, I did it. And if it's obvious that it wasn't you, that it was just good luck, then one says it was coincidence. Because if one doesn't believe in that, the business becomes very difficult. One has to believe that business has its own system of cause and effect. If you give charity, you're going to have less, and that's obvious. If you're honest, you're going to be less successful. That's clear. That's the way business operates. And it's very difficult to say, no, that's not the way business operates. There's a yard here. My business is fenced off, and if everything that's thrown into my yard is being thrown in by somebody, by who? By the Ribbono Shel Olam. And if he's the guy who's throwing it in, I'd better keep on the right side of him, never mind the customers. Him, he's the guy who's throwing the stuff in, not the customers. One has to see one's business in that way. What happens when you don't see your business in that way? The parsha immediately before Amalek is the parsha that deals with business integrity. And Rashi says the two are connected. If you're dishonest with business, expect Amalek to come along. What does it say about Amalek? Asher korcho baderech. He happened to hit you. Now the Jews must have been shocked out of their wits when Amalek hit them. They were traveling in the solid security that they were invisible. And they were invisible. They had this cloud around them and nobody knew where they were at any time. It was misty and foggy and nobody could see them. And they walked around in this kind of security, a huge desert, miles and miles, open miles. Even if somebody went looking for them and searching systematically, the chances are they would never find them. Amalek hits them. And the joke of it all was, Amalek wasn't even out to get them. He was going out for a walk that afternoon and he happened to bump into them. Says Rashi, Derech Mikra. If you think everything's coincidental, and that Harry Oppenheimer just happened to bump into you, then how about trying Amalek just bumping into you? Didn't notice the cloud, didn't notice you, wasn't even looking for you, happened to bump into you. That's Amalek. Asher korcho baderech. And what did Amalek do to them? Says Rashi in his second Perush. Not just that he destroyed them physically. Again, Loshon Keri, the Tumo. Korcho baderech, he chanced upon you, doesn't only mean in the Loshon Mikra that he chanced upon you, but he defiled you with homosexuality. Homosexuality is one of the lower forms, one of the lowest forms of tumor and defilement. It's just something which is so sick and distorted. And the fact that the world today is trying to condone it and accept it as normal simply demonstrates the degree of defilement of the world in which we're living. But leaving that aside, he defiled Am Yisrael with homosexuality, and that type of tumor is also called keri. And so you see again the concept of the tumor coming in, and the result of that was even worse, says Rashi. The result of that, after Amalek had succeeded in attacking the Jews once, the other people realized that the Jews were not invulnerable and that they could be attacked successfully. And so it opened a whole era of war which would never have happened to the Jewish people, all because of one coincidence that Amalek happened to be taking a Sunday walk in the mist on a misty day, and he bumped into 2 million Jews and he fought. That was the coincidence that happened. Says Rashi, if you believe that business is coincidence, and if you believe that business has its own system of cause and effect, and that it's not a private yard into which God is throwing the newspaper every morning, you don't know who the newspaper comes from and you think it's your cleverness or that it's just coincidental, then expect Amalek to bump into you coincidentally as well. That's just the way the world works. If you believe in coincidences, you're going to get some nasty ones too. They're not always going to be pleasant. And there we see again the need to be sensitive to the fence. Just know that nothing is coincidental. No, the same as nobody can ever say to you, if you challenge them in your house and say, how did you come in here? I thought the door was locked. He says, yes, the door was locked. It's just coincidence. I don't know quite how I got here. Just by chance. You don't accept that kind of thing. Nobody comes into your house by coincidence. And nobody comes into your fenced off sphere of influence. Nobody comes into your area of opportunities. And that includes everything you come into contact with. Everything you see, everything you think, every opportunity that you find, not one of them is there just by chance, because you're living off in a fenced off area of responsibility and area of influence, and everything that comes there is put there by the Ribbono Shel Olam, and we have to know that at all times. And lastly, just think what a beautiful Yom Tov the Jewish people would have lost for all eternity if they believed in coincidence. You know that the name of the Ribbono Shel Olam isn't mentioned once in the Megillah. It can all be explained by coincidence. It just happened. Achashverosh happened to fall in love with a Jewish girl. Mordechai happened to be outside the palace gates when the plot of the overthrow of Mordechai was being planned. Haman happened to be a jealous man. The king happened to suspect that Haman was having an affair with his wife. All happened. Amazing system of coincidences, and we would never have had Purim. That's it. There was not one time that it was all obvious that this was God, unless one believed that Shushan was a walled city, which it was, fenced, and everything that took place inside that city was there on purpose, deliberately. Nothing took place by chance in that city. It was all by God's design. Unless one believed that, one would have missed the whole story of Purim. One wouldn't have had that. We wouldn't have had the Megillah, we wouldn't have had the Seudah, and we wouldn't have had the Shalach Manas, and we wouldn't have had the Tzedakahs, we wouldn't have had anything of Purim, we wouldn't have known about the whole story. I wonder how many Yom Tovim there are in the world that have taken place throughout Jewish history that we could have been celebrating if only we were sensitive to that. I wonder how many Yom Tovim we could celebrate for ourselves, because there is such a thing as a private Yom Tov. A miracle happens to you, you can declare a Yom Tov for yourself, and you can say Hallel, and you can have a Seudah. Okay, that's not so quite to that degree, not such an open miracle. But how many little Purims, if only we saw our own areas as fenced in, as walled cities, and we appreciated that everything that happened there was happening by God's hand, it wasn't just coincidence. Do you want to know how many Purims we would have? We would have as many Purims as we are days old, because there isn't one day that goes by that the newspaper isn't delivered, and that in the newspaper there's something for you to see, especially for you. And it's not just one newspaper that's delivered. The milk is delivered too, and the orange juice is delivered too, and everything else is delivered right to your doorstep. Opportunity after opportunity, possibility after possibility, you're being bombarded with them all day, and not one of them is coincidental. Every one that has been put there because the Ribbono Shel Olam wants you to handle it. To handle it negatively or positively, to throw it back over the fence or to stick it in a rubbish bin, you know, in the mail one gets some stuff that one throws right into the rubbish bin as well. That's also called dealing with it. Doesn't matter. But there's not one thing that comes our way which hasn't been put there specially and for a purpose. And if we would only be sensitive to these fences, if we would only notice, we would have the das, the knowledge, that there is a fence and that nothing comes through that gate by chance. Everything that's there is there with an intent and with a purpose, we would find ourselves celebrating our lives, rejoicing at the beauty of the possibilities of the future, of the tremendous potential in everything that we can do and do. So much so that we would find ourselves living in Purim not once a year, but 365 days a year.